Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It's only a kick. A jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Good morning, Birdland. I'm Mark Brown. I've been covering the Orioles for more than a decade on CamdenChat.com and hosting this podcast for 104 episodes and counting. It is now April the 1st, 2024. To some, it is April Fool's Day. To me, it is simply Monday after the Orioles opened their season with a series win over the Los Angeles Angels. Nice as it would have been for a sweep, as Meatloaf sang to us long ago, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. It's always worth keeping in mind that fact when it comes to baseball. If you win 2 out of every 3 games for the season, you're talking about a 108-54 team. Not too shabby. Today's episode will be spent on impressions from the first few days of the season in the Orioles organization. Most of the time, it is easy for me to look and find possible negatives about the Orioles at any given moment. As I say regularly on this show, my life's experience as an Orioles fan has brought me much more bad than it has good. In this case, it's easy to find the positives for this simple reason. I was in the stands at Oriole Park at Camden Yards on Thursday and Saturday for 2 awesome wins that saw the offense pounding the opposition. At the same time, starting pitchers were carving them up like so many Easter holiday hams. Being as I was occupied with family time all afternoon yesterday, I did not have any opportunity to watch any part of that loss. So, yes, it sucks that the Orioles got just 3 hits as they failed to sweep the Angels, but it didn't hurt my good mood about the Orioles any because I didn't see any of it. In the last episode, I talked about how on opening day, you could practically feel like it was a new era at Camden Yards. And this feeling was there just as strongly on Saturday. The crowd was there to party. The Orioles gave everybody reasons to party. The hype for this season, it's legit, and it's understandable why, because there's something unique about this Orioles season in my adult lifetime, maybe even since Camden Yards opened, in that this might be the first time ever in those time stretches that the previous season's Orioles team was good to great, and then we made it to the next season with the team having actually seriously tried to improve over the offseason. Consider a decade ago when the Orioles won the AL East with a 96-66 record. That was awesome. After that season ended, we bid farewell to longtime Oriole Nick Markakis and short-time but awesome 2014 Orioles Nelson Cruz and Andrew Miller. Going into 2015, the only outside move to replace any of these guys was pretty much an ill-fated trade for Travis Snyder, not confidence-inspiring at the time, that it was made. There were pretty much no prospects who you could project for a 2015 impact. So, I mean, it was nice that so many guys were back from the 2014 Orioles going into 2015, but pretty much nothing was done to help them, and there was nothing on the horizon that seemed like it was going to help them. So, ultimately, I think that year's 81-81 was not too much of a surprise, although you maybe couldn't have specifically predicted the serious regression from, like, Bud Norris or Chris Tillman or Miguel Gonzalez to lesser degrees in the starting rotation, that you probably could have foreseen some regression at the plate from guys like Steve Pierce and even J.J. Hardy, which is exactly what happened. And so, you know, the Orioles, they won 15 fewer games going from 2014 to 2015, and it wasn't too much of a surprise. But compare that to right now. The Orioles won 101 games a year ago. The only key player who won't be back at all is Felix Bautista. Now, we all admittedly have some hopium currently directed towards Kyle Bradish's return by, let's say Memorial Day, as a, I'm hoping, conservative estimate. Really optimistically, I think if he's truly on a six-week delay, he'll be back around mid-May. But by trading for Corbin Burnes, the Orioles, I mean, they addressed their biggest obvious need in an exciting way that I don't think Dan Duquette in his tenure or Annie McPhail before him or any of the, previous general managers ever once managed. Although, in fairness, heading into that 2004 season, now 20 years ago, where the Orioles signed Miguel Tejada, Rafael Palmeiro for a second stint, and Javi Lopez, you know, that wasn't a bad winter now, was it? But if any of the hitters get hurt or stumble, the high-end prospects waiting in the minors include Jackson Holliday, Heston Kerstad, and Kobe Mayo, and that's not even counting Connor Norby, who is a solid prospect, but not a near-the-top-of-the-top 100 guy. And there's even no longer prospect, but still sort of interesting, Kyle Stowers. And this group of guys, this quintet, they also had two amazing first games for the Tides, just the same as Orioles batters did in Baltimore. So it's like the present was already bright, and it feels brighter because we can be reasonably certain there's some near future brightness coming too. It's really something. Hopefully the Orioles can keep all these good vibes rolling through, at a minimum, what seems like it could be a less challenging schedule of their overall 2024 calendar here in the month of April. The standouts at the plate for the first series for the Orioles were Anthony Santander, Gunnar Henderson, and Ryan Mountcastle. Santander homered from both sides of the plate across the first two games. Henderson was a double shy of the cycle on Saturday. I was just a little bit annoyed that Brandon Hyde decided to pinch hit Tony Kemp late in the game rather than give Henderson a shot at the double. But whatever, it doesn't matter. Mountcastle, he's got two doubles already. One of these was one of those tragic hits high off of Baltimore that really should have been a home run. Orioles batters were, in general, hitting the ball really freaking hard all across the field on Thursday and Saturday. So, I mean, if the Orioles are going to end up chasing a repeat of last year's success, I think it's going to be the things like those three guys looking like they did over the first two games that are going to be a big help towards that kind of repeat happening. As for the pitchers, the first outings by Corbin Burnes and Grayson Rodriguez speak for themselves. Even Tyler Wells on Sunday managed to overcome some initial difficulties to finish with a bare minimum quality start, that is, six innings with three earned runs allowed. Each of these three starters over the first three games had a pitch count through six innings that he probably could have been pushed to seven innings at a later date in the season. So that doesn't suck either. Now, we're going to see whether Dean Kramer and Cole Irvin can share in any part of this glory. Each of these guys is set to make his first start of the season in this next series over the next few days against the Royals. As of this recording, there is some rain in the forecast in Baltimore for all 3 days that the series is scheduled. We'll see if any of the games end up being impacted by postponements. There could be maybe a doubleheader set for Wednesday on what's now supposed to be a Wednesday afternoon. Maybe they will end up trying to play a game on a mutual off day later in April. But for now, Kramer is scheduled to start the game here tonight on Monday, with Irvin starting on Wednesday, Burnes scheduled to make his second start on Tuesday in between those two guys. And that Tuesday game really could be particularly interesting with its matchup of starting pitchers, as Burns will be opposed by Kansas City's Cole Ragans, an oft-injured pitcher when he was with the Rangers. He was acquired by the Royals at last year's trade deadline, and he's really honestly been flashing elite results since joining the Royals. So that really could be a good one for the Pitching Ninja Twitter account, among others. You know, Kansas City, they're not a team from whom good things are expected this year, so we can certainly hope the Orioles are going to come out and take a 2 out of 3, the same as they did against the Angels. The Picota simulation at Baseball Prospectus that had the Orioles as an 88-win team before Sunday's results, that sees a 70-win season from Kansas City. The only guy in their starting lineup from whom I think good things are anticipated is Bobby Witt Jr., relatively freshly minted with $289 million guaranteed to him through 2034, as even the small market Royals did a big contract extension with their young star. I mean, they've got former Oriole Adam Frazier in their lineup. I mean, the Royals actually did spend a chunk of money this offseason. They start the season with a bigger payroll than the Orioles, about $15 million more, thanks to signings that were made with the aim of bolstering their rotation. Seth Lugo getting $45 million over 3 years, and Michael Wacha lined up for $32 million over the next 2 seasons. So I don't know, maybe the team will end up surprising people if these moves end up working out. I will be irritated if that happens because, as you are aware, I have a lifelong grudge against the Royals due to the 2014 ALCS. But anyway, if the Royals do end up surprising, I hope that surprise starts happening after they have lost 2 of the next 3 games to the Orioles. I will be right back after a message from a Fans First Sports Network sponsor, and then I'll be talking about some stuff that's just a bit less exciting from the first weekend of the 2024 Orioles season.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Of all the things that happened over the first series, the one that I'm taking most personally is actually not directly involving the Orioles at all, because the freaking Yankees have opened up the season with a 4-game sweep of the Houston Astros. So really, thanks for nothing, Houston. The Astros bullpen took the loss in all 4 games of that series, with the losing run scoring in, I believe, the 7th or later in every one of those 4 games. This included a loss charged against reliever Taylor Scott. That's Taylor with an E, who I'm only mentioning because I'm enough of an Orioles sicko to remember Taylor Scott's 8 games with the 2019 Orioles, in which he had an 18.69 ERA. Talk about inglorious. Scott is 31 years old. He has a career ERA of 9.13. What the heck is he doing in the 2024 Astros bullpen, losing them games and giving the Yankees wins? Honestly, what the heck? Now, on the bright side, we know from last year that the Orioles are capable of overcoming an AL East opponent that starts off hot, and the Orioles then can go on to win the division. On the downside, I just want the Yankees to collapse and be unambiguously bad for a season. And now they've been had their wind in their sails with a 4-0 start. Like, is a collapse so much to ask? It's not, but yet it continues to not happen. Ah, okay, anyway, back in the confines of Birdland, one bad thing you probably already saw on Sunday is John Means getting absolutely wrecked in his first rehab outing for AAA Norfolk. 7 runs allowed as he failed to complete 2 innings. Now, in terms of Means' timetable, this is like an end of February spring training sort of outing. So, yet at the moment, it doesn't matter. Means he's got 30 days on his rehab assignment. Well, now it's down to 29. I think the Orioles are going to be looking to use all 29 remaining days. So it means he's got 4, maybe even 5 more starts to make before things matter for him. But at a minimum, we can say there's not an uninterrupted positive trajectory there. I think the plan for the 2024 Orioles making it through the first half of the season with what they've got, that's a little bit shakier if Means does not able to come back at least looking like a league average pitcher starting around May the 1st. Also, the first series of the year has not put any sort of test to the Orioles' back end of the bullpen, or really any part of the Orioles' bullpen. No one pitched in a late inning with a small lead because they were blowing the Angels out in the 2 games they won, and then they were behind the whole time in 1 game they lost. Craig Kimbrell, he has not pitched at all. Dylan Tate and Mike Bauman each had a shaky appearance over the first series. C&L Perez was no good for like 6 pitches, and then he hurt his oblique within that same 6-pitch stretch. So Perez, now on the injured list, he has been replaced in the short term by Jonathan Heasley, who is the pitcher that the Orioles are hoping to pull the same move they did a year ago with Ryan O'Hearn as a batter. Namely, maybe this guy who's been underwhelming forever will suddenly click now that he's away from the Royals. Now, I'm never glad for any injury, but I will say Perez getting hurt, the one silver lining of that happening, there is now one more optionable reliever available in the Orioles bullpen. So if they get to the point where they need to cycle fresh arms into the mix, they're going to have a bit more of an opportunity to do so. Now, maybe less of a silver lining is if they have to cycle fresh arms into the mix, that might end up being a guy like Brian Baker. That's not too exciting, but whatever. You know, if Orioles starters keep throwing at least 6 innings per game, probably it's all going to turn out all right. Probably. Now, they also probably will not keep throwing at least 6 innings per game if for no other reason than that Monday starter, Dean Kramer, only averaged 5.1 innings. That's 5 1/3 per game last year. So, like, even if Kramer is acceptable in his results this year, he's not likely to chew through innings. Then there's Cole Irvin, who had been an innings eater in Oakland. I think that is why the Orioles ended up trading for him a year ago. But he's yet to show anything like being an inning eater in Baltimore. So I don't know. If things go well for Means, we'll only have to be concerned with Irvin for April. On the other hand, even when returning, I think Means is unlikely to be pushed very hard and deep into games. But like, as for the bullpen, I mean, if you're worried about Kimbrell being washed or Yennier Cano not being able to come anywhere close to duplicating last year's success, or if you're worried that Tate cannot return to his past, you know, acceptable form, or if you're worried by the mere presence of Keegan Aiken, Bauman, and or Jacob Webb at all, well, you're going to have to keep worrying because although the Orioles did awesomely win 2 games, none of these guys really had to prove anything about what they've got in the tank for the 2024 season. Then there were 2 hitters who did not particularly get in on any of the opening series feast. That was Austin Hayes and Ramon Urias. Given the prospects who are in the minors, and even with Colton Cowser on the MLB roster, but not in the starting lineup for any of the first series worth of games, I think these guys are going to make Orioles fans impatient if they start off slow at the plate. And I don't think it's going to be easy for the Orioles to reduce the role of either one of these guys, given that Hayes has put up 8 wins above replacement, or Baseball Reference WAR anyway, over the past 3 seasons. Urias has been worth 7.5 WAR in the same time frame. That, of course, includes the Gold Glove win in 2022. The Orioles have already shown that they're going to choose Urias over a young guy, at least initially. I think that is part of the reason why they decided they were safe to play the service time manipulation shenanigans with Jackson Holliday, because they figured, you know what, we'll be fine with Ramon Urias. And you know what? We can certainly hope that they will be fine, but nonetheless, Arias is the only guy to play a bunch over the first three games and not have a hit yet. So, I don't know. That's only three games. It doesn't matter. If somebody takes an over in any three-game stretch in June or July or August, nobody is even really going to notice. That's just a little mini slump. But when it's to the start of the season, that's all there is to talk about for him. So, I don't know. Hopefully each of these guys can start turning it around now that they're going to get to face Kansas City Royals pitchers. But it's early. The Orioles are 2-1. There is absolutely no need to freak out about anything just yet. Even I, the notorious pessimist, do not counsel freaking out. I'm just saying that if the Orioles do enter a stretch that causes some freaking out, I think that it will not end up being very hard to have predicted the potential causes of that freakout stuff ahead of time. Remember, you can email CamdenCastPod@gmail.com to ask a question or suggest any discussion topic for a future episode. That's all that I've got for today. If you have enjoyed this show, please subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform. Maybe even tell an Orioles fan friend about the show, too. Thank you very much. I will be back on Friday morning to talk about whatever ends up happening between now and then in Orioles land. Hopefully, at least another two wins racked up against the Royals. Good Morning Birdland is a Camden Cast production on the Fans First Sports Network. This is Mark Brown, signing off.